Welcome into the Just Above Average podcast. I am your host, Dominic. This is the post-election recap podcast here from the 2020 election. We're going to run through the presidential and Senate election results and some of the topics surrounding the election. So this is the post-election recap episode on the Just Above Average podcast. So let's just jump right in here to the presidential election results. Votes are still being counted, particularly out west and in Alaska. They haven't even made any calls for the state of Alaska yet, but it's pretty clear what the narrative of this election is. A lot of people have said it's close, and that is just not the case. This election is not particularly close at the presidential level. Joe Biden will win nationally in the popular vote by over 5 million votes. He's probably going to get close to 52% of the vote, which is more than any challenger to an incumbent in American history since FDR. That's even more than Ronald Reagan got in 1980. He was at about 50.5%. Joe Biden's going to fly past that. He's going to get probably 306 electoral votes. Just a pretty much drubbing as he flipped some pretty major states in the upper Midwest and a couple surprises to me in the Southwest and Arizona, and then also still pending counting votes down in the state of Georgia. But first things first, yeah, this was not a particularly close election. It may have seemed that way, the way states count votes with all the election day votes in person being counted first in a lot of states before the mail-in absentee ballots are counted. And so the prevailing narrative was, oh, this was so close. But in actuality, when they finally start counting all the votes, it was not really that close. To those who question why the late-breaking mail-in votes are breaking so hard for Joe Biden, do you remember, all of 2020 when Donald Trump told everyone not to use mail-in ballots? I'm pretty sure his supporters listened to that and didn't vote by mail. While, on the other hand, Democrats were encouraging vote by mail as a COVID precaution to prevent people from being exposed to the virus. So it's not surprising why Democrats did better with mail-in ballots. Donald Trump was saying to everyone, every Republican, every person he could put in front of a camera, don't mail in ballots. It's not surprising that we see, as these mail-in ballots start being recorded and counted, that Democrats and Joe Biden are running up the score. And another narrative that has kind of emerged out of the election is, man, counting is taking so much longer than in the past. That's not true. It just so happens that most of the time in most elections, there's a pretty clear winner early in the night. So if you go to a basketball game and one team is blowing out the other up by 40 after three quarters, a lot of fans leave. They don't really care what the final score is, except for the team that's blowing the other team out is probably going to win. That's exactly what happens in elections as well. We already know who's going to win by the end of the third quarter, but the final results and final tallies are not counted on election night ever. That's never happened. There's canvasses and certification of the vote, and the Electoral College vote, which happens in December, has never happened earlier than December 12th, which is the date that they convene. So a lot of people just think, oh man, they're still counting votes. Didn't know that happened. No, it happens every single election. Votes trickle in, whether it be military ballots coming from overseas, just the pure volume of votes. Some races have to be recounted. So at the local level, especially if it's a two or three vote swing between candidates, there may just be a recount, and they might have to do it a couple different ways, either by hand, just run them through the machine again. There's a whole bunch of different ways they recount and get their final certification tally. But the certification never happens on election night. That is the narrative that I hope people learn, that always, they still count votes for weeks and weeks and weeks after the election. Every single time there's a whole bunch of House of Representatives races that aren't called, probably 20 or 30 every 2 years, and people don't bat an eye because they're still counting votes. The other big thing before I get into kind of state-by-state results is there is no voter fraud, despite what anybody tries to say or videos that you see on Facebook or anything like that. Just a couple of videos that have already been debunked. There was one from Wisconsin where you could see from a live stream people writing on the ballots. That's because up in Green Bay, there was a ballot printing error, and so they had to hand transfer the voters' intentions from one ballot to another. There's a Democrat, a Republican, and an election observer, all three looking at these ballots. One says whatever the result is on one ballot, the other person writes it down. That's just so they can get rid of the printing errors and so that the votes are counted accurately. There's also some other ballot stuffing ones that actually legitimately and literally came from Russia. But the biggest kind of point around voter fraud and the lack thereof is the fact that you would have to think that if there was so much voter fraud to steal the election from Donald Trump, that the Democrats, Joe Biden, etc., didn't bother to make gains in the Senate or the House or governorships or state legislative seats or any of that, because they got their ass kicked on those. For the most part, there's some states that they won and they should have. But you would have to say they didn't bother, while committing all this massive fraud, to actually win a whole bunch of other races. They just said, we'll let all the Republicans win in the other races. That is the argument you would have to make. Or, as some people have tried to say, literally in states where Republicans won and are going to Washington, etc., are literally, like in Georgia, questioning voter fraud at the presidential level. But if there's fraud at the presidential level on those same exact ballots that you are elected to, talking about Republican officials here who were elected on the same exact ballot, that would mean their election was also fraudulent. And none of them seem to realize that blatant hypocrisy in the same point. Anyway, there's no credible allegations of voter fraud to this point, and it's impossible to prove that there wasn't voter fraud because it's impossible to prove a negative. But the other big thing that I think is going to happen here, two things. Number one, Republicans are about to rediscover their fiscal conservatism, despite throwing it away for 4 years and exploding the debt under Donald Trump. They're going to really complain about spending again and how the economy roars with tax cuts, even though that's proven not to be true. The other thing is, when you go through these recounts or the lawsuits and et cetera, people try to make the comparison to Florida 2000, the Bush v. Gore. Literally none of these things are the same. There were kind of three major things in Florida 2000 that were at issue. One, it was so close, like around 500 votes was the difference between the two candidates in Florida, Bush v. Gore. The second was the ballot design in the state of Florida at the time. There used to be a punch card type system, and in the ballot design, you could punch one card and it would actually punch through two different separate races. And so some ballots would become invalidated when they voted for multiple candidates in a race. And then the third thing about those Florida ballots was the famous hanging chads or dimpled chads. These were the things where you punch out on a ballot. If they didn't go all the way through and knock out the hanging piece of paper, or if the system had so many things in there already and it was too full, it didn't actually punch all the way through. It just made a dimple. So those were the things that were at the center of the Florida 2000 recount. Literally none of those things are in this election. The only remotely close thing you could think about would be a recount. And the closest state as of yet, as of today, Tuesday, is 14,000 votes, not 500, 14,000. And so even back in 2000, the results didn't change. The votes moved a little bit in Bush v. Gore, but nowhere near close to 1,000, let alone 14,000. Michigan, Biden won by about 150,000. He's up by about 50,000 in Pennsylvania, and that continues to rise. Arizona's around 14,000. Georgia's around 14,000. So, yeah, just not at all comparable to the 2000 recount, despite people trying to make that comparison. Let's jump right in and start with the House of Representatives at this hour, Tuesday night at about 9 o'clock. 215 House races have been called for Democrats, 201 for Republicans, with 19 races still outstanding. So yes, they are still counting votes on places around the country, and there are still 19 House seats up for grabs. I mean, most of them probably won't really change, but yeah, Republicans made gains. Some places, shockingly, like down in Florida, Miami-Dade picked up 2 seats. Some of the other ones were from 2018 flips, where some Democrats picked up Trump seats. Not at all that surprising that they would flip some of those back. But I think Democrats weren't quite prepared for quite as many losses as they took. Had we not seen some of the sloganeering of defund the police and some of these other far-left talking points kind of dominate the national conversation, and I think we've seen this in the postmortem from House Democrats who did already either lose or won narrowly. They're saying the exact same thing here, is that the slogans like defund the police absolutely killed moderate swing state Democrats in the House of Representatives. There's no way about it. Joe Cunningham in South Carolina. There's a couple others. Abby Finkenauer up in the state of Iowa. One who was probably going to lose no matter what was Colin Peterson, House Agriculture Chairman up in the state of Minnesota. His district had voted heavily for Trump, and he had kind of hung on by the skin of his teeth the past couple of years, as the district had moved heavily Republican, despite him winning there in western Minnesota. But there's a couple others, about 4 or 5 House races in California still to be called, one in Utah to watch, as well as a few more sprinkled about the country. But pretty good night for House Republicans. Democrats will probably retain the majority with around 226, 227, 218 is the majority number there. But yeah, we'll see how the rest of those races play out. But before we get to the Senate races, let's hit an ad break here on the Just Above Average podcast. And we're back here on the Just Above Average podcast election recap episode. I'm moving into the Senate races here. If you were a neutral observer, you probably could have seen a few of the House races flip back to Republicans. And there was some disappointment for Democrats there that they didn't have an even bigger blue wave than 2018, which I thought was always stupid because Trump was always going to get his base out. And in 2018, they didn't come out because he wasn't on the ballot. I think most people were kind of shocked and surprised by the lack of pickups by the Democrats. That's me included. In the Senate, they did pick up 2 seats so far, that being the Arizona special election, where Mark Kelly, the astronaut and husband of former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who was shot in the head in Arizona, picked up a seat over Martha McSally in that special election. This seat will be up again in 2 years. But Mark Kelly has proven to be a stellar candidate and a masterful fundraiser, so I would be very surprised to see him knocked off in 2 years. especially because there's not going to be very much excitement going on in 2 years, I don't think. The other big pickup for Democrats was the state of Colorado, where former Governor John Hickenlooper knocked off incumbent Cory Gardner. On the Republican side, they did get their main pickup of Alabama. No surprise there. Tommy Tuberville, former Auburn coach, beats Doug Jones, who won that special election at the end of 2017 against Roy Moore. A lot of the other main targets for Democrats fell flat. In the state of Maine, Sarah Gideon way underperformed expectations. Susan Collins won 51.1% of the vote there. She didn't even have to wait until the ranked choice voting thing kicked in. So in the state of Maine, if you have multiple candidates on a ballot, you can say, I want to vote with this person first. But if they don't get in the top two, then I want this person. But in order for that to kick in, nobody can reach 50% of the vote. Susan Collins picks up 50% of the vote on the first round, which means ranked choice voting didn't even matter. But impressive for her, as Biden carried her state pretty handily. She did not lead a single poll since about July. Probably the biggest disappointment for Democrats was Maine and Susan Collins holding her seat. Some of the other disappointments for Democrats, North Carolina, Cal Cunningham does not end up unseating Tom Tillis. I was surprised by this one. I thought Cunningham would get carried across the line. He did not. Tom Tillis back for another term in the U.S. Senate. In the state of Iowa, Democrats thought Teresa Greenfield might be able to knock off Joni Ernst. This is a state where I think the defund the police narrative really hurt Democrats. Ernst latched on to Trump for dear life, and he carried her to a victory. The other two kind of big disappointments, and I shouldn't even say big disappointments. These two were always going to be heavy lifts, but state of Kansas, where Roger Marshall beats Barbara Beaulieu. I never really thought this race was going to be that close, and in the end, it didn't really turn out to be 53-41. Just because in super red states like this, the voters are willing to vote for a Democratic governor. We've seen that in Kansas, Louisiana, Kentucky. And this is my just theory behind this. It's the fact that voters feel like they're closer to home when they're in their state capital and more accountable. But if they send them off to Washington, they're out of their clutches and won't really be able to be held accountable to the voters. So that's kind of my theory behind why these super red states are willing to take a chance on Democratic candidates for governor, but not for federal races. That also kind of goes for Montana. Steve Daines wins 54-45. Against Steve Bullock, the incumbent governor there in the state of Montana, Democratic governor in a red state. I think Bullock was the number one Senate candidate for Democrats in terms of outperforming the national ticket. Obviously not enough there in the state of Montana. A couple of the races that some people may have thought were in play but weren't: Texas. John Cornyn wins re-election by about 10% over MJ Hagar. The one positive for, and Alaska's still out there. I don't expect Al Gross to make a huge comeback when the absentee ballots, mail-in ballots are finally counted, but can't discount it. I still think Dan Sullivan wins out in Alaska when it's all said and done. Back to the good part for Democrats. In the state of Georgia, not only does Joe Biden win the state and its electoral votes, but he helps carry both of the Senate candidates Senate races into runoffs. Since no candidate in either race for both the Senate seats reached 50% plus one, that means the top two vote getters in each of those elections will go to a runoff. That means there will be two separate two-person races between a Republican and a Democrat going on in the state of Georgia, and that will happen on January 5th, which is 2 days after the Congress and senators are sworn in. So we'll see, at least for a couple of days, Georgia with up in the air. But assuming the Republicans hold on to Alaska, the count will be 50 Republicans to 48 Democrats, with those two Georgia Senate races going to runoffs. If Democrats win both, and it is 50-50, Kamala Harris, as vice president, will break the tie. The vice president is the president of the Senate. That means that they are responsible for tiebreakers when it comes to it. I would probably give Republicans the edge for both of the races, considering turnout will be lower and Democrats might be resting on their laurels a bit with a President Biden, and the fact that both of the Democratic candidates somewhat underperformed Joe Biden. You have to imagine that Joe Biden got at least a portion or a slice of moderate Republicans and people who were just tired of Trump's shtick. But yeah, January 5th, we will finally find out who will control the U.S. Senate. Finally, let's look at the granddaddy of them all, the presidential race. Have to admit, there were a couple states that I was very wrong on and a couple states that blew me out of the water that I was surprised by. Starting from east and going west, kind of the Northeast, nobody was really surprised that Joe Biden swept all those. Trump didn't end up taking the second congressional district in Maine. It was close, but in the end of the day, Trump carried that. Trump won Florida and Ohio pretty with decent margins, as well as the state of North Carolina. This is one that I thought Joe Biden would pick up. He did not. The count right now has Trump up around 70,000-ish votes, about 50% to 48.7. It might get a little bit closer as they finish counting, but looks like Trump is going to carry the state of North Carolina, as well as kind of the rest of the South, with the exception of Georgia, but we'll get back to that. Across the Midwest and the Plains, nothing too unexpected. Democrats take Illinois, or Republicans take most of the other Midwest and Plains states. In the upper Midwest, which is where most of the election focus was, not only did Democrats hold Minnesota, but it wasn't really that close. Joe Biden won by about 7%, 52 to 45. And then, of course, the fabled blue wall. Joe Biden flips back the states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Wisconsin was won by about 20,000 votes. That is going to a recount, but shouldn't really change too much there. Obviously, I went to graduate school at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. I have a lot of friends who are up there. I know they worked hard to get turnout up in Dane County, which is where Madison is, kind of the liberal bastion of the state, as well as a huge focus on the city of Milwaukee, where Hillary Clinton really underperformed 4 years ago, and then this time they really upped turnout and aided Joe Biden's performance. So it wasn't surprising to me to watch the state of Wisconsin. I think this is going to be this decade's perennial bellwether swing state. It's going to be the closest one in the nation, I think, for the next decade. But hey, we'll see how it all goes. Michigan was probably the least surprising of the flips, in my opinion. Democrats absolutely dominated in 2018 here. So it wasn't that surprising. Once again, Hillary Clinton underperformed in Detroit, and Joe Biden did not. He also upped the gains in suburban areas. And it wasn't really that close. He won by about 150,000 votes, about 2.7% spread there. Pennsylvania, Joe Biden being from Scranton in the kind of northeastern part of the state, I was not very surprised. by the fact that he flipped it back. As all the mail-in ballots come in, his lead continues to climb. Right now it's about 50,000 votes, but it's expected to continue to rise as they finish the count there in Pennsylvania. This is where most of the legal challengers are going, just because it's probably the biggest electoral prize. But shouldn't be surprising when Joe Biden claims the city of Scranton as his hometown, and there's a huge turnout machine and the city of Philadelphia for Democrats. Going down south, the one that blew my mind was the state of Georgia. I did not expect Georgia to turn blue in at least for another decade, I'm going to be honest with you. But you have to put your hat, tip your cap to Stacey Abrams, who ran that close race for governor a couple years ago and stayed in the state and made up a huge ground game. And it 100% definitely probably helped carry Joe Biden across the finish line in the state as he ran it up in Atlanta and the metro area there, where the heavily black population lives, as well as the few other kind of states, or not states, but cities within the state, Columbus, Savannah. He also got a big old fat chunk of votes there, and it offset the gains that Trump ran up the score in rural Georgia. So I can't say I know a whole lot about the state, but I do have to say that I was very surprised by Georgia turning blue. We'll see if that stays for the Senate runoffs, but as of 2020, it is possible to make Georgia blue again. Joe Biden won the states of Colorado and New Mexico. Not surprised there. Trump wins the Mountain West upper portion, Wyoming, Utah, Idaho, Montana. Biden wins the West Coast, Washington, Oregon, California, Hawaii. Nobody was surprised by that. Trump will probably win Alaska, although that's not called yet. Nevada and Arizona were two relatively close states. Nevada, I never really expected Trump to win or really be that close. Democrats know how to turn out the city of Las Vegas, which is a majority of the population in the state. And not a whole lot of population there in Nevada, but Trump did make gains with Hispanics, and Nevada is one of those places where he did. That also goes for the states of Texas and Florida, particularly among Cuban population down there in South Florida. But I always felt like Joe Biden was going to win Nevada. This is Harry Reid's home state, and he built a Democratic machine out there. Who knows where and how to get votes? The other final state that I'll talk about here is the state of Arizona. We will probably call this John McCain's last laugh. It's pretty well known that Trump and had a big old feud with John McCain while he was alive, and also after he passed away, continually attacking him and his service to the country. Apparently there were a lot of people in Trump world who wanted him to drop his attacks on John McCain, but the president decided he did not want to stop doing that, and it probably cost him the state of Arizona. They are still counting votes, but it looks like Joe Biden is probably going to hold on by about 10,000 votes or so. Cindy McCain, John McCain's widow, did endorse him in the race. And you have to think that that probably counts for something, especially as this race was probably made on the margins there in the state of Arizona. So, kind of in recap, Joe Biden rebuilds the blue wall in the upper Midwest. He makes a relatively expected flip in the state of Arizona, with it being John McCain's last laugh against President Trump. And the big surprise to me, oh, Georgia, sweet Georgia, this is Masters Week down there in the state, but Yeah. Joe Biden flips the state of Georgia. The final electoral count for Joe Biden will probably be 306. All sources mention Joe Biden did flip the second congressional district in the state of Nebraska. That's the Omaha district. Was relatively expected by a lot of people considering his gains in suburban America. But anyway, yeah, so 306 electoral votes for Joe Biden. We have two Senate races going to runoff, and Democrats will hold the House of Representatives. So early in the night, it looked like it might be really bad for Democrats, but as the mail-in ballots came in, and there's nothing nefarious about why the Democrats dominated mail-in ballots. Trump told Republicans not to use them, and Democrats encouraged them to use them. We're looking at, for Democrats, at best, a 50-50 Senate, and at worst, a 52-48 minority, which they can work with, as Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski in Alaska, along with Mitt Romney occasionally, have proven they are willing to buck Mitch McConnell. So we'll see what happens here in the next 4 years. But come January 20th, Joe Biden will be the 46th president of the United States. That is it for the election recap episode here on the Just Above Average podcast. I am your host, Dominic. Thanks again for listening, and we will catch you next time.